All right, good evening, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Stephanie Ulbrich. While my presentation is loading, I didn't know that it was a part of the custom to have a slide dedicating saying that you have no relationships or financial obligations or whatever to disclose. So I have none of those to disclose other than the presence of the relation of my 90-year-old grandmother sitting in the audience. And as mentioned, we have a flight to catch, which is why she's here. And so I will take questions immediately after the presentation. My email's there in case something doesn't get answered along the way. So the project that I will be presenting today is titled Ocular Complaints Among a Population of Underserved Ecuadorians, Public Health Implications. As mentioned, this project was a part of my capstone MPH defense that I did in, at CASE last January. And the inspiration behind the project was one time when I was in Ecuador, I was translating and a man had a pterygium growing over his eye, and he wanted to fix his vision, and we said, you know, the only way that you can fix your vision is to get a surgery to remove that off of the front of your eye, and he said that he doesn't have any money for it. So while my uncle, who was the physician seeing him, while we were trying to think of different service teams that we saw that saw patients in the area to help him, the local nurse was like, well, they do free surgeries for this down the street. And we had no idea. So the moral of that story I learned was that it's not just about providing them with care, but it's showing them what's around them. So this study was born, and I'd like to thank my co-collaborators on the study. Dr. Mendel Singer was my statistician advisor. Dr. Jennifer Fern was kind of my global health guru advisor. And Dr. Harry McLeod was the local expert. So the objective of this study is to improve the health of rural Ecuadorians by understanding the healthcare-seeking behaviors and improving the connections between health needs and services available. I did this by identifying prevalent presenting health problems, identifying existing regional health services, and reporting healthcare utilization behaviors of rural Ecuadorians. All of these pictures are also from our trip, so be jealous. just a general overview of Ecuador. The population is almost 15 million people, 40% of whom are rural dwelling population. Their GDP per capita is 7,400, which is roughly 43% of the regional average. And of that percent, or of that GDP, about 5.4% is spent on their healthcare costs, which equals out to being roughly a third of what other countries in the regional area spend on their healthcare utilization. Furthermore, Ecuador is rather unstable, both politically, economically. In the past 11 years, it has been overturned 13 times. So there's a lot of instability, and this is especially burdensome to those of the low socioeconomic status and generally the rural population. 25 to 30% lack immediate access to care. Again, this emphasizes the rural, low socioeconomic population that have to not only travel further, they have to travel on poorer roads and perhaps lack the means to actually receive care. Also, with this very outspread population, there's only about 148 physicians per 100,000 people in Ecuador. And again, you can imagine that they might be congregated within the cities as opposed to being in the rural areas where a lot of the population is. In fact, of the physicians, 97% of the private physicians are located within the urban centers, and 86% of the public physicians are. So therefore, you know that even less of them are servicing the 40% rural population. UNICEF has titled Ecuador as one of the most inequitable countries in the world. The poorest fifth of their population only has 5% of the GDP, while the highest fifth has about 50%. A promising feature of Ecuador is that in 2000, they had a national healthcare revamp to make health free and universal. In 2008, there was an amendment to that, which is listed as follows: health is a guaranteed right. there's free and universal public services to all. That includes both screening, diagnosis, medication, treatment, rehabilitation. So it really covers the whole gamut. And that they said that protecting the health of the rural population was one of their targets. Fortunately, we haven't really seen that to be true yet. So Bolivar is the province where I did this study. The population is 182,000. It's a similar but a little less covered by physicians, 140 per 100,000 people. And the survey, there was two parts of this study. There was a quantitative and a qualitative part. The quantitative part was a paper and pencil study. So it was really geared toward those underfunded, underserved areas that, you know, you're not going to have a Palm Pilot to do your survey. You're not going to have a computer. So it was paper and pencil. It was recorded by the healthcare providers, so it was bilingual since there was both Ecuadorian and American healthcare providers giving care side by side. We recorded the following information: demographics, cheek complaints, chronic conditions that are known to them, healthcare utilization, transportation, diagnosis, health maintenance. Participation was completely elective. Most people that chose not to participate said it was just due to a time constraint. And of the patients seen, this is people presenting to the International Medical Volunteers Mobile Clinic. This organization has been going to Ecuador for, I think, the past 8 years biannually, so they have a very good relationship with the local government. And almost 26,000 patients were seen. Just over 18,000 surveys were collected, and of those, 1,465 were analyzed. So that gives us that. The reason why there was a difference between those collected and analyzed, one provider, their comments were illegible, so we could not use them. And furthermore, the last city that we were surveying was a repeat city that we had previously seen, and it was a lot of follow-up. So that way, that patient demographic was a little different. Then, as I said, there was also a qualitative approach to the study. This was to identify the local healthcare resources that are currently available. It was done with a convenience sample with the healthcare providers that we were working with, and it was a semi-structured qualitative study, and we assessed it for theme and patterns of the responses. And we asked the participants their role, their care availability of the care that was offered. So there are limitations to the study. It was only done in one province, so perhaps there's a lack of generalizability. But again, with the fact that it's a pretty large sample size, that might be minimized. There's also inter-observer variability. There was a number of healthcare professionals that were involved in this study and recording, and different professionals had different ways of recording their information, whether they noted that they transferred them to a different department within the clinic, such as that. And furthermore, it was self-reported data. This comes with its limitations, but in global health work, that is the norm, so that's not too much of a limitation. So these are the descriptive statistics of my study. Majority of the women, or the participants, were female. There's a couple reasons for this. A, the study, or the clinic is held during the day, so generally the women would be available. There's also possibly a cultural bias that women are considered weak, and they need more care than the men. Lastly, the women are generally responsible for bringing the children to the clinic. So all three of those reasons makes sense. There's a pretty high literacy rate, 80.6%. This might be because this is a very proactive population that we saw actively presenting to the clinic to receive care. And the less educated population may not have been aware of the fact that this clinic was going on. And let's see what else. So a majority of these patients walked to clinic, and they traveled about 40 minutes to get there, but there was a range up to 8 hours in order to get to the clinic. These are all of the cities that we surveyed. That is information as to the ages, and it's a pretty wide range, and the various providers were recorded as well. So the results of our study. Today I will highlight the ophthalmologic complaints because those were really substantially very high and pretty interesting. So there was about 14.7% of, or I'm sorry, let's go over to complaints first. So there was 42.7%, even higher, complaints of ophthalmologic complaints presenting at the clinic. These were mostly due to like red eyes, scratchy eyes, excessive tearing. What else did they have? They also had, they came in complaining of cataracts or pterygium, and these are due for a couple of reasons why we think. So this province is located in the Andes Mountains, so they're very close to the UV rays, and they lack protection against them. They also have a lot of dust in their air. These people are mostly agricultural workers, so they're constantly exposed to these sun rays. And furthermore, the vision complaints are likely due to the fact that every year the International Medical Volunteers team brings donated glasses. This year they brought 1,400, or this session they brought 1,400, and those were always advertised in their publications, and so we pretty much think that this is due to that. Other big complaints were ENT. They have this practice of putting wool into their ear to keep out the air, and so this causes an excessive amount of wax to build up in their ear, which explains the ENT complaints. Pain likely has to do with the fact that they're a very agrarian culture and they really work the land and their bodies. Stomach complaints, they have endemic H. pylori bacteria in their water, so gastritis is a reoccurring problem, as is parasites. And then we see similar findings when we go over to diagnoses. Again, ophthalmologic is high. It's a little less high than it was in complaints. This might be due to the fact that, like I was talking about with the inter-observer variability, we had a separate little eye clinic within the clinic, and so sometimes every physician would record, yes, I sent over to the eye clinic. Other times people would just send them there without noting it. So most of the diagnosis for ophthalmologic concerns were presbyopia. They were also pterygium, blepharitis, conjunctivitis, so things of that nature. If you can notice, pain also decreased from complaints to diagnoses. This was likely due to the fact that it was just more subspecialized and categorized better. So there's arthritis that became a large percentage that wasn't there initially in complaints. And stomach problems are still there and almost equally as high. Two things that were interesting, there was a really high percentage of people with hypertension, some that came in presenting with hypertension and some that were kind of diagnosed there, which maybe off of one diagnosis or one blood pressure reading isn't the most accurate thing, but that's the only reading that you ever get, then maybe you do have hypertension. This is a concern for ophthalmologic concerns because but hypertension honestly has a problem with or a comorbidity of having vision loss. There's also a lot of mortalities obviously associated with that. And furthermore, diabetes was present in the population, and with that we have concerns about retinopathy. So the results of the qualitative study are as follows. I asked the respondents what services are offered locally, and I underlined here those responses that were greater than 50%. So dentistry, general medicine, and social service were all listed as frequently occurring within their population. There was not even one response saying anything about eye care, so that's concerning. Even if we look towards disease specific, there was stuff about lice, there was stuff about amoebas and parasites, which is great, but again, still nothing for eye care. The location that these services were provided was kind of throughout. They were within the small provincial regions and within the communities. They also noted that there's complementary care given. There is a naturalistic, holistic, native medicine that is practiced there, and they said that, you know, a lot of these places give it. They also said that these places are utilized, which is great. And most of them saying that the services provided there are free, which is good, and that it can, you know, follows up with the Constitution. But however, we're still seeing that these people aren't getting the attention that they need. So the reality of how these Ecuadorians are accessing their health care are as follows. Most people are receiving their care, when they do receive it, at that local hospital or at the subcentro. The subcentro is just a small clinic within the province, and that's showing just over 38 and just over 40% of the people. The high percentage of people receiving care at the hospital might indicate that we need more primary care offices in the area. It may also show that the people that are seeking care are more gravely ill. And then if we look down at the last time that the people received care, we see that almost 60% received care within the past 6 months, which is great. However, if you total up the people who haven't received care in more than a year or they've never received care, it's just over 36%. So that's really troubling. And then the reasons for their lack of care. A lot of people said that they don't know where to go, they don't have the money to go, or that it just wasn't needed. So the first two are concerning, especially considered that in the Constitution those two should not be a problem. So the conclusion of this study is that both international medical volunteers can use this information to better their clinic in preparation for their future services. My recommendations are that they both expand their eyeglass and sunglass program that they currently have. Generally, we have a very fine line between giving out all of our glasses when they're requested and then running out very early in the process versus like turning away people. So if they bring more, that would be better because there's definitely the demand for it. Also, if we bring an ophthalmologist or an optometrist or any other ocular expert, that would be great because, you know, there really is a dire need there for this attention. More long-term, I thought that the local health population could promote disease-specific programs, such as ocular programs, also, you know, primary care facilities that are closer to the people, so that way they have easier access. If there's a follow-up study, would be great, hopefully in my future, as to see really if the people are using all of these resources that are there. So maybe a qualitative, quantitative study following up that. And lastly, I'd like to acknowledge people that helped this study be possible. Again, my collaborators on the study in the top right-hand corner, the MPH department at CASE, the PANCO scholarship at CASE, and the School of Graduate Studies Student Travel Award Program, all of these three things for funding the study and for funding me to come here. International Medical Volunteers is the organization that I mentioned that I worked with, so thank you to them. And lastly, to the Provincial Health Clinic of Bolivar for making this possible. Oh, and then I guess lastly, on the side of that school building, I'd really like to thank that school because it really embodies what I think why global health is so important. It says, to be present and not useful for society is to be dead in life, which I thought was very true and very very profound for on the side of a school. So I will take any questions. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. Mm-hmm. Question, you said there was 146 health professionals per
100,000.
Okay, per 100,000. Mm-hmm. So that's including nurses, doctors, or just primary care physicians?
I believe it's including everyone. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So if you talk about specialists, then I'm sure it gets even more
exactly
narrow.
Right. And then as in like any other country, there's always the whole idea of, you know, once you become a successful physician or if it's a successful healthcare worker fleeing to go someplace else as well. So
mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Thank you. Yeah. So they're, I mean, they are taken care of as they are presented, but when I was asking them this question, I said, are there any, like, disease-specific programs? Like, or do you have a program, like, that are here, you know, you have interest groups targeting diabetes, saying, you know, eat healthy, check your blood sugar often, those kind of things, or, you know, walk 20 miles a day, even though that's not realistic. So any disease-specific programs, I was asking them on that behalf. They did say that they have them for prenatal care, which was good, but they did not have them for any ocular complaints or for those chronic conditions, which is really concerning. Yes?
As a follow-up to that question, mm-hmm. given the agrarian nature of the population, yes. the rural, the outdoor exercise, what do you attribute the high rate of hypertension diabetes
yeah.
to?
So I think what that's most attributed to is even throughout I've been going there for about 3 years, and my uncle has been going there for, I think, about 6 or 7 years. And in the short time that we've been there, we have seen the westernization of their diet. So this is remotely in the Andes Mountains, like, you know, back roading on dirt roads, twists and turns. And this picture right here. This little girl came into us with, like, you know, her father in his native clothes and with a lollipop in her mouth right there. And she had, like, probably 8 cavities in her mouth. And so I taught my uncle one phrase that was asukar, which means sugar, and then he went, ah. So I think that their diet has a lot to do with it. I don't think that their bodies are used to having all of these processed foods, because for them it's kind of a status symbol, like, oh, I have a bag of chips, you know, I did well today, so I'm going to go into town and get my family those foods. So I think that that's what has to do with it. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Wherever we were, there's always Coke.
Yeah.
Coke and Coke Light, the Diet Coke. So I was wondering if that was...
There are. Yeah, there definitely are. I would say a little less on the pops, but, like, more on just, like, the sugary beverages. They would sometimes give us the drinks for lunch where they'd have a plastic bag filled with this very sugary juice drink, and you just bite it off and drink it. And I think it was... you know, again, kind of like a fun thing for the kids, but also, like, again, a status symbol. Like, we have this to offer you instead of just tea or just coffee or just water. So.
Disclosure,
The
Coke down, but what I noticed is what other students who had gone internationally said, mm-hmm. no matter where they went, it was like, there's a Coke machine.
Yeah.
So that it was more international than some of the other beverages.
Yes. Yeah, I do agree. I think, actually, I spent some time in Peru, and I think the only country that has a native beverage that out-profits Coca-Cola is in Peru. They have Inca Cola, but it's still like a sugary soft drink. So, yes?
You mentioned kind of the lack of eye care providers.
Yes.
Did you get a sense that the primary care providers and the other healthcare workers at least had a pretty good knowledge of eye conditions?
Yes.
I
do think that they have a good level by the fact that a lot of times when people would come in complaining of eye complaints, if it wasn't just, you know, my eyes are red or my eyes are watery, it was, I have a pterygium. So the fact that these patients knew that, I think they had to have gotten that information from someplace. So I think that there is a good knowledge base, but I think that, again, it's located in, like, their cities and just places where people that really have these conditions aren't located. And then I think preventing them is something that's also not talked about. I think dealing with them is what's talked about, but there's this kid that was 7 years old that came in with a pterygium that was halfway across his eye. Like, he was 7. So I think that preventing them is not discussed at all. Yes?
In age range, did you find that there was middle age or older adult population? What was the age range?
Just in the clinic overall? It was a completely wide range. It was on my slide somewhere, if I can go back. But it was very, very broad. Here you go. So the mean age was 40 years old, but there was a complete range as to the age range. As specific to eye complaints, it was everything. There would be kids coming in, rubbing their eyes, saying that they had blurry vision. There was that young kid that I mentioned with the pterygium that was coming in. But mostly the eye complaints were of the older population. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
What about cataracts?
Cataracts, they were prevalent. What my understanding was locally that they are, there are surgeries available for them. They were present in the older population, not really out of the age range that I would say that's normal for a cataract. But they were there.
WHL has a pretty pretty hard from the cataract within Latin America and the Caribbean. So I was wondering if you think
that. I mean, it was present. I wouldn't say it was the I wouldn't say it was out of the ordinary. So. Okay, thank you. And if you have any questions, pretty easy, public-health@case.edu will be my personal account. Thank you very much.